The new year brings a multi-billion dollar infusion of federal funds to help rural Americans stay healthy. Where's that money going and what will it fund?
The idea is to transform rural America from the inside up, right? They wanted proposals from the states for technology initiatives like telehealth booths and drones delivering prescriptions in Alaska and robotics in Alabama to improve maternity care.
Our guest is Sarah Jane Tribble. She is the lead reporter on the Rural Health Desk of KFF Health News. Previously, she covered the healthcare industry in Cleveland, reported for major newspapers from the Carolinas to California.
I don't want to get distracted by, say, the Medicaid conversation here or the politics here. These applications came in. There's a scope of practice that these states are working on. And I think for this year, as a reporter, accountability, I want to make sure that when the dollars are being spent, they're being spent in the way that Congress intended.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Well, Sarah Jane, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you for having me.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's a very busy new year.
Absolutely. Lots going on. And we talk to a lot of reporters on our program, but we've never met someone solely focused on rural healthcare. Tell us a little bit about your beat and how you became interested in these stories.
Yeah. So I grew up in rural America. I have a long history with KFF Health News, Kaiser Health News formerly, and I was covering healthcare for decades, really off and on. I was on the business desk at newspapers, sometimes with healthcare and otherwise. When I came to DC, I was on another beat, but a hospital, the second hospital near my hometown in Kansas, had closed, and I went and covered it. And after spending a year doing that, writing a podcast about it, doing a narrative podcast, I asked to be a rural health correspondent because I thought there were just so many issues in rural America, and KFF Health News made it happen.
Oh, what a great story and what a great inspiration that you had to do that and look where it's led. So today we're really interested in talking about the big news. The federal government announced awardees of its Rural Health Transformation Fund at the end of 25, just a week or two ago. This involves $50 billion to the states over 5 years. Doesn't say anything about after 5 years. Let's share with our listeners, if you would, what was this announcement all about and what's been the reaction in rural America?
Right. So I think that the reaction is cautious in rural America. They're excited for the funding, but, you know, this funding came as part of the big beautiful, right? The big tax and spending bill in July. And during that debate, as your listeners will probably recall, there was a lot of concern about Medicaid cuts. Mm-hmm. KFF, the policy side of the house, has calculated that $137 billion will be cut from rural America's Medicaid spending over the course of a decade. So if you think about it, $137 billion being cut, they approved this bill for the Rural Health Transformation Program at $50 billion. The conversation in Congress at the time was very much to make up for those cuts for rural hospitals. And so that's one of the reasons it was passed. When the law was approved, though, if you read it, it's very prescriptive and it doesn't necessarily go to rural hospitals.
You know, you've taken a hard look at the applications for the funds, and you wrote that the federal government promised radical transparency, but it seems it's withheld a lot of details. What would you like to see that's missing from their reporting?
Yeah, as a journalist, I'd like to see the full applications from all states. Most states have provided them to us upon request. I'd like to see the federal government posting the grant applications in full so we can see what the states are doing for their work of scope. My understanding is that, you know, these were competitive grants. The CMS went through them and approved them. I'd like to know exactly what those final approvals were so that then we can hold officials accountable and make sure rural Americans are getting the benefit from the bill that Congress intended.
Thinking about scope in rural Americans, what is the size of rural America, just for our audience's edification?
Well, it's almost a funny question. That's why you see me smile. It's about 60 million Americans. Every state has rural, but it's funny because I've been looking at the rurality numbers for these $50 billion that's being handed out, because that was one of the factors in measuring what states received. And Rhode Island has like 24,000 rural residents. But as you can imagine, Texas, California, Alaska have huge amounts of rural. But there's rural in every state.
Right, right. And as people have often said to me, there's rural and then there's rural, or as sparsely
right.
populated, sparsely populated areas. And we could talk all day about this topic. You know, I have to ask some health policy experts and some Democrats have raised alarms that this program will become something of a slush fund to fund particular projects and maybe not be as targeted to the original intent. How partisan do things look right now when these considerations are being made about funding?
Yeah, I think that's a big concern for everyone. I had quoted, a congressperson from Illinois concerned about retribution, that her state wouldn't get the funding that it needed because they have a largely Democratic leadership. When you look at the initial funds, the awards, per rural resident, Rhode Island gets the most. Texas does not get the most. Texas got the biggest lump sum. It's Republican, of course, and Secretary Kennedy went down to Texas in September and celebrated their HB 18 bill, which also proposed rural hospital sustainability. So there's a connection there. Initially, I think I'm hearing from the expert that they're not seeing a lot of partisanship. I think that time will tell, though, and we need to dig into the numbers and how the scoring was done a little bit more.
That's kind of interesting because the most recent news, the five Democratic states were cut on some social service funding, or at least frozen at this time as they look at fraud and abuse. So we'll certainly keep an eye on it. You know, the fund was part of H.R. 1, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, and it was meant to address concerns about Medicaid cutbacks, as you said earlier, and their effects on the healthcare in rural areas. But wondering if the funds will be enough to stem this financial stress on rural clinics, hospitals, and other providers?
Well, I'll switch that up a little bit and just say it's not supposed to be, right? Like, so the debate in Congress was hopeful that it would be helpful to sustain these hospitals, but actually the bill itself is very prescriptive in saying that it doesn't go directly to rural hospitals necessarily. The idea is to transform rural America from the inside up, right? They wanted proposals from the states for technology initiatives like telehealth booths and drones delivering prescriptions in Alaska and robotics in Alabama to improve maternity care. Those aren't things that necessarily are saying, I'm going to send money to rural hospitals. And in fact, the administration's been very clear, this is not to shore up rural hospitals necessarily, or even rural clinics. It's supposed to transform. So this infusion of money, when you read the applications, there's a lot of ideas out there that have nothing to do with rural hospitals. That said, there are ideas that do send money to rural hospitals too. So if you're sitting in a state and you're wondering what is happening in the state, my advice would be to go to our website and look at the application. If we have it, if we have the project narrative online, see what the state was intending and watch for that.
What is the impact on rural? Mm-hmm. What are you seeing as the impact on rural hospitals? This seems to be really a hodgepodge response to a crisis that's out there, not intended to solve that problem, but it's a 50-state solution. Seems a little chaotic. No central themes here.
Yeah, I mean, there are themes in the overall applications and bills that were passed. And CMS put out a sort of what I'm calling a white paper, but really it's just like slides on each state and what they approved. And so you can look at that and see what each state is being lauded by CMS for including in their application. The themes in there are telehealth. There's workforce initiatives. A lot of states have workforce initiatives. There's what looks like kind of deregulation or free market initiatives, things like mm-hmm. short-term health care insurance. There's certificate of need disappearing in many states or proposals for that. There's widening scopes of practice, right, for practitioners, whether it be pharmacists or doulas in a lot of states. So that's kind of the short way of saying the themes. To get back to your question about rural hospitals and rural clinics, I did reach out to the National Rural Health Association. You know, they're the biggest, association that covers rural hospitals and rural clinics across the U.S. They are cautiously optimistic. They did see some bright spots in Washington State and Alabama and elsewhere where money is going to go to help rural hospitals. At the same time, I think there's concern about this sort of consistent talk from the administration that larger regional hospitals can help out smaller rural hospitals. And sure, what I'm hearing from the experts is sure, of course, but we don't want them to take over the rural hospitals. We don't want them to do a consolidation effort. We would rather work with them in a network way.
Mm-hmm. Well, inherent in what you're saying, and Mark, you referenced it as well, I think, is the workforce issue. And certainly many of the proposals are talking about investing in more residency training programs for physicians, I think some for nurse practitioners, yeah, behavioral health therapists. But there's such a for anyone who's done this work, and you've been covering the beat for a long while, there's a long ramp up to put all of that in place to be able to do it, unless you're trying to really hook it back to someplace else in an urban area. What are your thoughts about the feasibility of some of the strategies that are being looked at around workforce?
Yeah, you know, I've covered these workforce issues sort of tangibly, like in different ways, right, over the last 5 years. So I've seen, you know, I've talked to people about their nursing programs being ramped up with the University of, you know, Kansas, for example. And I've talked to folks in Illinois about how they do rotations in rural areas outside of their major academic centers. I've interviewed, you know, a doctor who's a family practitioner in Georgia. She's in a rural area and she has trained to deliver babies, right? So those sort of workforce initiatives. What occurs to me when I read the applications is states have been working on these for a long time. This is nothing new.
Right.
And what I'm looking for in these applications is, okay, so are they focusing on the things that are working and building them? Are they presenting something new? There's 50 states. I haven't gone through all the applications. I don't know the answer to that, but that's sort of one of the questions I'm asking as a reporter.
Yeah, just sort of timing on this. The money was awarded. I'm not sure when it will be distributed. And I think some states are worried a little bit about what additional conditions might be put on these in terms of states needing to provide additional information on their Medicaid population or other things. Any word about that or any conversations going on now about the devil's in the detail of what those details might look to the states to actually receive the money?
Yeah, so on the call on December 29th, the Oz, Mehmet Oz had, the administrator at CMS had, or HHS, well, CMS, I'm gonna get that wrong, sorry. Mehmet Oz, CMS, on that call and with his staff members, they sort of provided, I thought, a lot of clarity, actually. They want this money to come out as soon as possible. They've created the Office of Rural Health Transformation to manage this money. They're hiring program officers to work with the states. They didn't say how many, but it sounded like they were ramping up to really make sure that they were communicating directly with the states on their expectations out of these applications. They were very clear about that. There will be progress reports due later this year, and they talked about the late summer, August timeframe for reviewing how states are doing in their progress. And of course, we've seen the headlines that there's clawbacks. And what they really said on the call was, you know, you've got this amount allotted this year, and it may not be the same amount in the coming years, depending on how you perform the initiatives and goals that you set forth in the application that we worked with you to get to. So states should be concerned about ramping up quickly and getting their projects done. That's very much the message. They want to see outcomes starting to happen within the next year or two to continue getting that money. And they were clear that states could see less or more money depending on that in the future.
Well, we can't talk about healthcare without talking about technology and telehealth, and we certainly can't talk about rural health and healthcare without talking about telehealth. Maybe share what you thought was really innovative and what proposals are coming in to really transform rural healthcare through technology and telehealth.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know about innovative, but there are some fun things. I think the telerobotics in Alabama for maternal care, CMS, Oz has highlighted that one. It stands out in the applications. I think there's drone ideas in Alaska. That's interesting to think of drones possibly delivering prescriptions. The more regular things that I'm seeing are sort of hub and spoke telehealth booths, things. I mentioned this yesterday on another call, but I did a story. I did a series of dead zone, what we're calling the dead zone series, on lack of high-speed internet in rural areas. And one of the companies I've talked to throughout that has a booth in Alabama. It's called OnMed. They certainly want to be part of these conversations for the rural health funding, and they're working with states to sort of put these they're not basic booths that you walk in and there's like a life-size person and things can drop down and you can measure your blood pressure and you can talk to a nurse practitioner or somebody on the other end. Those are the kind of things we're seeing. That's not necessarily innovative, but if they work, states are proposing, and we'll see what happens.
Is that part of the KFF Health News reporting about the 3 million people living in rural counties where in-person care is extremely limited and telehealth is largely out of reach? Is that part of the Alabama solution or?
Well, Alabama is certainly trying it. Some universities are working with OnMed, and they've got it in a couple of spots in Alabama. For that specific company, there's other companies out there too. I don't mean to just highlight one, but sure. That's the one that I ran into in rural Alabama that was trying to make a go of it there. So yeah, that's in the first story of the series actually that we have. So we can put that online for folks to see, and we've got pictures of it and everything.
Keep an eye on it. And back to all rural areas are unique in their own way. Certainly rural America is home to many of our Native American tribes. You traveled to Idaho and wrote a really insightful story about one tribe's challenges on both the health and the technology fronts. We'd love to have you share with our listeners some of that, what you learned and saw.
Yeah, it was an honor. On the second trip, it was very clear to me that the tribal elders had to approve my visit to the land as a closed reservation. I went to Shoshone-Bennec Tribes Fort Hall Reservation in remote Idaho twice. I first went in 2024, and then I went back. I'll note that on these dead zone stories, what we're calling dead zone, which is, the 3 million people in more than 200 counties in rural America where there's a lack of high-speed internet, as well as healthcare providers. So we've just tagged that dead zone. Tribal areas don't show up in the FCC data in the same way. They're often claimed to be served by companies, but they're not actually served by companies. There are some tribes, Cherokee, some others in California, that have extensive telecommunications networks. They've been doing them for years, but there are many across the U.S. that have reservations without high-speed internet, and they're working to get that. Challenges include, that I learned from the tribe, Francis Goley is the broadband director of the Shoshone-Bennec Tribes effort. Those challenges include getting spectrum so they can have wireless internet. You have to buy that and get it. They also include rocky terrain and figuring out how to do the construction for the cable. And they really want their sovereignty to be withheld. They don't want to hand over the control to companies. And so I learned all of that on my visits to the reservations. But in addition, I should just add, and I don't mean to get too touchy-feely here, but the people I met carried generational trauma with them in a way that I was surprised by. On the reservation. And they stated this very plainly. And so when you talk about things like telehealth and not being able to have telehealth, particularly during the pandemic, having counseling and being able to use telehealth in ways that would be important to their people, I think is something to acknowledge. And I think that they acknowledge that telehealth would help them expand their access to healthcare in ways that would benefit them deeply.
Mm-hmm. Sort of two sides of the coin there. We know certainly hearing the lived experience of people who are trying to receive support and counseling on one hand, and we see in our urban health centers the access that's become available for mental health by telehealth, right? So many of our patients are living on hour-to-hour pay scales, and they can't make the long trip.
Right.
Lose the income that would come in getting out in your car and talking to somebody on telehealth is really important. I'm kind of surprised about how many we continue to hear how many counties still don't have access to high-speed internet. Okay. Particularly, I thought in the Biden administration there was a huge push to create access to high-speed internet. I've sort of lost track of where that stands. I don't know if that's some bit of knowledge that you might shine a light on for us.
Yeah, so the Biden Infrastructure Act made a good, big, huge push. Yeah. Internet for All was the idea. And actually, that was part of the reporting for the Dead Zone series. So if you go through the stories, I have that. But when the Trump administration came in, they decided to revamp that program. There were complaints that the program was moving too slow, which is interesting to me as a reporter, because as I interviewed folks, it seemed like they were becoming to an end. Like some of the Biden administration initiatives, the money had flown out several years previously, but some of them were actually starting to happen, right? So For example, the map that we have up, it could be updated now. There's CARES Act money that went out during the pandemic and ARPA money that went out during the pandemic. Some of those projects are just now getting built. Some of them have been built. So you're seeing more progress towards high-speed internet. But to answer
Sarah Jane, I also thought there was a generational change because the Biden administration was looking at hardwiring. The Trump administration looked like it was saying satellites. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the sort of the major tectonic shift, if you will, about how we're going to do this.
So, yeah, just to answer your question, and I was getting there. But so when the Trump administration came in, they revamped the BEAD program, the Broadband Equity Act, and they said that states had to reapply their proposals. So this is like $42 billion. They had to reapply their proposals. Most of the states were near the finish line. The Biden era prioritized high-speed fiber optic cables. And so the states put out applications prioritizing that. The Trump administration came in and said, no, that's going to take too long, too slow. We've got satellite. Let's have satellite. That's sort of the basic way of saying it. And so the states all had to reapply with new proposals that included more satellite access, basically. And we're seeing those applications come in and getting approvals. The NTIA has a website up where you can track those and see where the states are in their progress. West Virginia was near the finish line and was expecting to file when all this happened in early 2025, and they had to redo theirs. I think because of the push in West Virginia, they secured fiber cable more than was expected at the beginning of the Trump administration. So I think I think West Virginia is a particularly interesting state to watch on that one.
And healthcare things so often circle back to the workforce issue, no matter which dimension we're talking about. And you've written, and we appreciate your writing, around the maternal health crisis in rural America. We have a maternal health crisis in a lot of areas, but certainly in the rural areas. And one thing you've specifically noted is the issue of family medicine physicians being trained in obstetrics and maybe more focus on that. And I was curious where you were going with that. And in my experience with family medicine physicians, they all are trained in obstetrics, but often the ability to be supported in rural areas, to have those absolute connections to specialty OBGYN or perinatal services is what's lacking. What would you like to see happen? Is it more family physicians being trained or a higher emphasis on the obstetrical part of the training? What are you hoping to see there? And what's the role also for certified nurse midwives and other people who can deliver some of that OB care in these very rural areas?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting conversation. As a reporter, I don't want to give my opinion on what should happen or what shouldn't happen. But, when I think about what I heard Mehmet Oz say on the call on December 29th about, delivery of maternal care and other things, it is true that research shows the more you do something, the better you get at it, right? So if you're in a rural area and you're delivering one or two babies a year, do you feel fully equipped? Do you feel fully ready? Is your staff fully ready? I think that's a fair question to ask. And so some of the programs where you have people who have trained in rotation in rural areas, but also in academic major medical centers, then they keep those contacts and go out to rural areas. And I have talked to family medicine doctors who want more closer connection. They want more training on those things. So I think if family medicine doctors can fill that gap, the reporting I've done, and they can also get consistent training and they're not left out there on their own to sort of do it once or twice a year, I think rural communities could benefit from that. But I do also hear that concern that you want consistent, high-quality care. I don't know that one doesn't beget the other. Like, I don't know that they're exclusive. So I'm as a reporter, I just want to watch those trends and see, who can deliver babies. When I was in New Mexico, they had a big push for doulas and other services, and they were using telehealth with a nurse practitioner, setting up the telehealth, talking to a doctor in another community so that those mothers didn't have to drive an hour and a half for their basic prenatal care. That was a system that was working there. I think states can come up with their own plans. But I do think as a person who comes from rural America and somebody who talks to a lot of rural Americans, everybody wants good, high quality care. So don't take that away from them.
Absolutely. Sarah Jane, you know, we live in such a divided country, the red states versus the blue states, cities versus counties. Do you have any sort of thoughts on how we could close this rural-urban divide in our country that exists, especially as it relates to the healthcare?
Is your question political, or is it more from
It's more of a wisdom question. What any sort of general, best practices or thoughts that you have about, you know, this stark divide that we have in our country and how we might get more focused on this sort of unity?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things I love about being a reporter is talking to people. And I just think that, you know, don't look at people as other, right? They're not others. They're not people that you aren't like you. We're all humans. We all want the same things. We want to wake up in the morning, feel happy, productive. We want to be around our loved ones. We want to be able to live our lives without interference. So at a very basic level, if you just look at all of us as humans, whether we're Republican or Democrat or no matter what state we live in or really where we live, then you say, okay, as a human, what is good healthcare? And I think that as just a person and a reporter, I think that's the way I approach all my stories. What I would caution against is thinking, well, maybe they could make do with, because you don't want anybody to make do with whatever technology or whatever lack of care. You know, it's good enough. It's better than nothing. Those phrases are sort of flags for me, because I don't want my grandmother or my mother to have better than nothing. I want them to have
the best
standard care. World class.
Coming from the community health center world, we are 100% in complete agreement with you. Yeah. Best care anywhere, best care everywhere, and totally agree with that. We thank you so much for joining us today, but I have to ask you, with such a massive subject in this year, right, this first year of the Rural Transformation Grants, what are the big areas that you're going to be keeping an eye on and that we should all be keeping an eye on to make sure that we really take this kind of once in a lifetime opportunity of focus as well as financing to really make things better across the country for people living in rural America?
I'm going to give you a journalistic answer: accountability. I mean, I don't want to get distracted by, say, the Medicaid conversation here or the politics here. These applications came in. There's a scope of practice that these states are working on. And I think for this year, as a reporter, accountability, I want to make sure that when the dollars are being spent, they're being spent in the way that Congress intended.
Perfect. Optimism plus reality checks at every point along the spectrum. Thank you so much, Sarah Jane, for joining us. And thank you to our audience for being here. Just a reminder, subscribe to our videos on YouTube. Find us on Facebook and X. And please share your thoughts and your comments about this program. Take care. Be well. This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.